Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 22nd of February. It's All Things Political, and our guest this hour is Goldie Taylor, editor-at-large at The Daily Beast. She served as a political analyst and on-air contributor at MSNBC, focusing on public policy issues. And throughout her career, she's worked on political campaigns and served as communications director for elected officials. I feel like I'm spending my whole life watching election returns, and some of you are as well, and watching all of the caucuses and the primaries now in full force. So this hour, of course, we'll be talking about the Nevada Democratic Caucus, where Hillary Clinton won, the South Carolina primary, where Trump won big with all of the delegates going to him, Jeb Bush leaving the presidential race, Mitt Romney endorsing Marco Rubio, and many other so-called establishment Republicans trying to rally around Marco Rubio. Are we looking at, as Donald Trump said today, a Hillary Clinton-Donald Trump race? And he says it's going to be a huge turnout. We welcome your phone calls. Let's take your take on all that's happened over the weekend and what's coming up this week. Tomorrow, the caucuses in Nevada. Saturday, the Democratic primary in South Carolina. And then on to Super Tuesday with lots and lots of races. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We are on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Hi, Goldie. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me back. It's good to be with you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Let's start with Donald Trump before we go to Hillary's win. He won big in South Carolina, got all of the delegates. Obviously, some people in the Republican Party aren't very happy about that. But do you think he looks, there's no way to stop him now?
I'm not sure that there is, given that he won a good share of the Southern evangelical vote out of South Carolina. They'll do the same in other states like Tennessee, Virginia, Georgia, where he had an awesome big crowd last evening. And so Donald Trump has certainly the momentum behind him and certainly does not have another opponent either in Marco Rubio or in Senator Ted Cruz, who I think would be able, you know, to single-handedly topple him, even with the so-called establishment circling around Marco Rubio at this time.
Isn't it amazing when you stop and think of it that the Republican nominee could be Donald Trump, Goldie?
It is absolutely amazing.
It is.
It's nothing that I think that anyone could have foretold, least of all, establishment Republicans out of D.C. who might have had another choice. You know, 18 months ago, they thought their nominee would be Jeb Bush. But we saw him giving a very gracious, speech to exit the race just Sunday night. Saturday night, just after the Nevada caucuses. And so it was a very tough race for him. He never could really find his footing despite having, you know, a $100 million PAC supporting him, despite raising, you know, lots of money and having a great campaign team, was never able truly to find his footing.
No, he sure wasn't. Trump said today, talking about the general election, that he says that he will be facing Hillary Clinton, and it would be he would be bringing out the greatest turnout in history. What do you make of that?
Well, that's and the likelihood of that is probably at least 75%. I mean, we're looking at typically. The winner in South Carolina for the GOP is typically the nominee. You know, we saw that with George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
We saw that with some other nominees. And so, and the same may be true for Hillary Clinton as she looks at a March and April campaign calendar, which tilt heavily in her favor, having more diverse delegate-rich states at stake. And so it is likely that we'll see a Trump-Clinton face-off this fall. However, I don't know that the turnout will be strong, but not really for the reasons that I think he's hoping. I think that Donald Trump is thinking that people will turn out in mass to the polls to elect him president, And I think there are some people who are betting that people will turn out to the polls to make sure that he is not president.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let's move to the Democratic side. You have written yesterday, with the South Carolina and Super Tuesday looming ahead, Bernie Sanders' campaign is fast approaching an expiration date. Not only will the revolution not be televised, at least in the case of Senator Bernie Sanders, it appears to have an expiration date.
You know, I think that if we look at the March calendar, Super Tuesday or Virginia and Georgia are at stake, Tennessee, Arkansas comes into play, Texas later comes into play. We watch states really across the South and even up into Oklahoma where Bernie Sanders is going to have a very tough time racking up any wins. If you look at that map, you find three places where he has some pretty good odds, of course, in his home state of Vermont, in Massachusetts, and likely in Minnesota. But that's really the full of it through the end of April. And I don't know that you've ever seen a Democratic nominee lose nearly every race in March and in April and then go on to capture the nomination.
Mm-hmm. Why is it he's not responding, he's not being able to resonate with African-American voters, Goldie?
I don't know that it is his message so much as it is the depth of his relationships. You know, I think that
I
know, Senator Sanders,
mm-hmm.
Senator Sanders has been in Congress for, you know, about 30 years, but never really had very strong relationships in non-white communities. I mean, he represented Vermont, which is about 3 to 5% African American, and so never had to have a great level of dealing with that community. And so today he is facing off with a candidate who has built her entire public life and that of her husband off of deep relationships within the African-American community. And so she had black pastors to whom she could tap. She had black elected officials to whom she could go to who would serve as strong surrogates. And this is really a game that Bernie Sanders has only now begun to play in recent months, where he has begun to plant seeds, build relationships, lure surrogates to his candidacy, people like former NAACP President Benjamin Jealous, former State House Representative out of Ohio, Nina Turner. I mean, he's got some very strong surrogates out there, but I don't know that it is enough to lift him to a significant share of the vote.
Mm-hmm. She, though, when you look at the campaign of 2008, there surely must have been some African-Americans who didn't like the way she conducted that campaign against President Barack Obama.
Without question. And even in South Carolina, there were people who were supporting her who said, as an aside, you know, we really don't like what happened here in 2008. We don't like how the campaign unfolded here or across the country. I mean, quite frankly, there were some very ugly things said, both on the campaign trail and, you know, in the whisper circuit about this president before he was elected.
Yes.
And so there really was a great level of bad blood. But what you're watching in the African-American community are a couple of things happening. One, they're voting on the long relationship. Two, they have had great access with every Clinton administration. President Bill Clinton appointed more African-Americans to his cabinet than any other president, including this one. If you look at, you know, really how they have, you know, built those relationships over the years, African-Americans are making a second bet. They're betting on viability.
Mm-hmm.
They're betting that Hillary Clinton will be the stronger candidate this fall and that they, as a group, cannot afford to lose this White House to a Republican, and least of all, a Republican like Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at, a lot of commentators have been talking about turnouts, that the Democrats so far have not had nearly the turnout in primaries and caucuses that the Republicans have. Hillary, it has been said, has a couple problems. One is that when you look at, and this is an amazing thing, 17 to 44-year-olds, Bernie has led her by 50 points, with young
yes.
people really becoming enthusiastic about his campaign. I find it hard to believe, and maybe you can convince me otherwise, that a lot of those young voters are going to be rushing to the polls to vote for Hillary Clinton. Do you think I'm wrong?
No, I think you're probably right about that, that she has failed to energize younger voters, millennials and Gen Xers, who, you know, would otherwise might have been, you know, excited about having the first woman as a president, but that's not what they're voting on. They're voting on the message that Bernie Sanders is putting out there. He's talking about free college education, which is something that is just so inaccessible to so many Americans. He's talking about reforming health care improving on what this president has done with the Affordable Care Act. You know, he's talking about, making taxation fairer. He's talking about taking on Wall Street. You know, all of those things that younger voters are truly interested in, Bernie Sanders has baked into his message. He's certainly talking about income inequality, which I think is drawing in more young women voters. But the difference for Senator Sanders is most of the progressives that he's pulling to his side happen to be young white progressives.
Mm-hmm.
Among non-white progressives, Hispanics, and particularly African-Americans, that vote is still breaking heavily for Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm. And is that because she's running pretty heavily on the continuation of Obama policy campaign?
A good deal of it is that. I mean, among African-Americans, if you look at their approval rating for this president, it is extraordinarily
yes.
high. And so to the extent that she has embraced him as a president, a little bit assuages what, you know, some of the nastiness that went on in 2008 for many of them, and the fact that he appointed her then, you know, nominated her then as Secretary of State, gives them, I guess, a little bit of heart and feeling about it, or at least a bit of a way out in terms of voting for her. And so you see a split like that. The problem for Bernie Sanders is that you can't win a Democratic primary with only white progressives. The Democratic Party is a highly diverse one in terms of primary voters. And, you know, the train really will roll through some of these more highly diverse, you know, delegate-rich states.
And how do you explain, Goldie, before we go to phone calls, this not overwhelming, some people are not voting for him, but Donald Trump doing so phenomenally well. To whom is he appealing and why? What's the message? Because he's crude, he doesn't have detailed plans on anything,
sure.
He's said some absolutely outrageous and untruthful things, and here he is winning by big numbers these races. What's going on?
You know, I think there is one thing that Donald Trump is right about. He is tapping into an anger that exists in this country. We saw it rear its head in 2008. It was even stronger in 2012. And in the 2014 midterms, we heard the phrases, take our country back. Well, frankly, Republicans, especially grassroots Republicans, Tea Partiers, don't believe that the establishment of their party has done enough to turn back the tide on some of the reforms that we've seen over the last 8 years. They don't believe that they've been strong enough. Yeah, for instance, on immigration, that they've been strong enough in terms of reform and entitlements, that they've been strong enough in terms of criminal justice. And so they're looking at an outsider like Donald Trump, who says without mincing words, I'm going to fix that. He doesn't say how. He doesn't say when. He just simply says, I hear you, I am one of you, and I'm going to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, it's going to be huge.
It's going to be, yeah, he's going to have great advisors. They're not going to be weak. They'll be strong, right?
That's right.
Yeah. There also must be a substantial number of Republicans who weren't very happy with the administration of George W. Bush because he really hit him pretty hard on getting into the Iraq War, and it was based on lies, and Jeb brought his brother to campaign with him in South Carolina. He evidently is supposed to be popular, but everybody thinks, well, that's the latest thing that's going to do Trump in, but it resonated with a lot of Republicans. They didn't like that war.
You know, they didn't like the war, but, you know, Donald Trump has said a number of things. He said that John McCain was not a war hero.
Yes.
He said some things that would normally strike Republicans, I think, in the wrong place. But he's saying something else in all of that. He is saying that, you know, he's going to build a wall and keep the people we don't want out of this country. That means I'm going to save your jobs. I'm going to bring jobs back from China. He's making, you know, sort of these broad platitudes about what he's going to do and how it's going to, you know, improve the lives of the voters that he's really after. And so he really has tapped into a resentment, into an anger, you know, that exists in this country. I think that there is a cap on that, but not enough of a cap to keep him away from this nomination. And so it appears that every time we think Donald Trump has, you know, stepped in it, his poll numbers tend to rise.
They sure do. Goldie Taylor is our guest this hour, and you're listening to All Things Political here on the Ideas Network. We've had the Nevada Democratic Caucus, Hillary Clinton winning. We had the South Carolina primary. Jeb Bush has left the race. There are Republicans worried that Donald Trump seems to be moving pretty quickly toward enough delegates so that he'll have them before the convention. Mitt Romney endorsed Marco Rubio. What do you think on the Democratic side and the Republican side? Does it look, as Goldie Taylor has written in yesterday's column, Bernie Sanders' campaign is fast approaching an expiration date. Do you see any way forward for him? What about Donald Trump? Do you think that he's right, that it's going to be a general election, Donald Trump facing Hillary Clinton, and that it will bring out, as he says, the greatest turnout in history? Please, and some Trump supporters, I'd love to hear from you, too. Please tell us the undying support for him. What is it in terms of policy that you like about him? Do you think it's inevitable that he will be the nominee and that Hillary Clinton will be the nominee? Or, as some have said, I believe it was Donald Trump who said this, if she gets indicted, that's the only way she is going to be stopped. What about the massive number of young people? They're not breaking for Donald Trump. They're breaking for Bernie Sanders. And they are in a huge way. I did read, and I'll have to ask for confirmation from Goldie on this, that the youth vote in the Nevada caucus was something like 5 points higher than for President Obama in 2008, which I found interesting. What about all this idealism, all of these young people entering the political process? What happens with that? Will they vote for Hillary Clinton in a general election? Is there something that Democrats need to be nervous about when you look at more people voting in Republican primaries than in Democratic primaries? What's the way forward for all of the candidates? Here's how you reach our conversation with Goldie Taylor. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page, where we love to read your comments as well, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. Goldie Taylor is editor at large at The Daily Beast. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All things political, lines are jammed. Just keep the number in mind, 800-486-8655. Claire in Madison is our first caller. Hi, Claire.
Hi, thank you, Kathleen. About the turnout for the Saturday caucus in Nevada, I thought it was very unusual, even odd, that they would have the caucus on a Saturday, considering that Nevada's number one industry is hospitality, the casinos, the restaurants, the hotels. So many people in that industry have to work on Saturdays. And so that would certainly account for a lower turnout. And I didn't think that made much sense if they did that on a Saturday.
All right, Claire, Goldie.
You know, I think, you know, the notion that caucuses are still a part of our system, I think, is a bit unfortunate as well. It takes an awful lot of time. Investment away from family, away from work, away from school, or whatever your daily life is, to go and spend, you know, half of a day or full day or an evening at a caucus. When, if you want to register your support for someone in a typical primary state, you can go in and cast a ballot, you know, and take a few minutes out of your day and move on. If there are enough in terms of machines and the lines are short. So I do think that it is unfortunate that the caucuses can be held over the weekend in states like that. But in Nevada, particularly along in Las Vegas, there are caucus sites on the site of the casinos. And there were six of them. And employers allowed their employees, particularly culinary unions and others, negotiated with those casinos and hotels to allow their employees to leave for the caucuses. But that, you know, they wouldn't leave their floors completely empty. And so that did leave, I think, a lot of people out of the process. But that has always been the process. And even for the Saturday caucus in 2008 and 2012, you had exceedingly high turnout. And so I wouldn't blame it all on it being on a Saturday. But I think that she's right that having Saturday caucuses can be very difficult, particularly on industries like that. Mm-hmm. And having a caucus rather than a paper ballot at all, I think, presents some challenges and hurdles for people who would have a difficult time and have some real economic cost to leaving work or leaving their families.
For people like us, Goldie, there's probably no better way to spend a Saturday afternoon than to go to a caucus. But for a lot of other people, it wouldn't be. They have other things they want to do.
Well, there are people who are frying the bacon, people who are serving tables, and,
right.
and people who are being hospitable to us. In their service jobs, who don't, you know, have that kind of freedom.
Right. Thanks, Claire, for your call. Nicholas in Berlin. Hi, Nicholas.
Hello. I just keep on, I listen to your show quite a bit, almost daily, and I compare it to the articles I read about Trump and the media, and I just read a really good article in Time, and it was basically kind of bashing people like you who just completely ignore all the effectiveness that Trump has. I mean, I guarantee you if you make $11.50 an hour, you would be voting for Trump. All the other candidates are, you know, Hillary was pro-NAFTA. You know, she's taking all that money from Wall Street, all that money from corporations. I mean, if you're somebody like me, you're a little guy, anybody who knows how good things can be, you just, it's either Sanders or Trump, and now Sanders seems to be losing to the Democratic, you know, machine. So that's all I have. Thanks so much.
But, Nicholas, why would you choose Trump over Sanders?
Oh, I wouldn't. Oh. I would vote Sanders, but it's the Democratic Party seems to be rigged for Hillary. I mean, I haven't even seen a Democratic debate. They're all on weekends and Friday nights. I mean, this is, it's ridiculous. I can watch the Republican debates on my break at work. I've seen like five or six of them, and I don't even try to watch them. I can't even watch a Democratic debate if I wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have been at weird times, Goldie.
No, I have to agree with him about that. The way that this primary was structured specifically on the Democratic side by the DNC to hold town halls and debates over the weekends and times when people were least able to or could really watch them, I think was a really unfortunate choice on their part. And I think it was a part of making sure that they always say they don't put their hand on the scale, but I think there was a little bit of tipping here in terms of, you know, Hillary Clinton had a nearly 100% name ID while Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley were just getting to know voters. And so the way to introduce them would be in prime time during the week when families can gather around the television set and watch. And so I think there is a point to that. I've also heard an awful lot of people, like your callers, say that, you know, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders may be very different in terms of their candidacy, but they're really talking about the same things. They're both outsiders. Both come from, even though Bernie Sanders has been in Congress for around 30 years and in public life for nearly all of his adult life, he's still regarded as an outsider. And both are pushing a message that they are fighting for the working class vote, for people who do make, you know, $7.50, $11.50 right. an hour, people who, you know, really are trying to survive, cope, and make it, people who are falling below the income gap, people who, you know, have yet to realize and don't see the American dream in sight, that both Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are selling a message that they'll be able to do that. The unfortunate thing for Donald Trump is that he's not giving any specifics as to why, how he can do it. He says he will, but there aren't any definitive plans and certainly no real numbers to go behind those plans. He's put out, I think, one comprehensive tax plan that, you know, experts say will cost this country trillions. On the other side, you've got Bernie Sanders, who has, you know, plans around health care, plans around income equality, plans around education, but the way in which he intends to pay for them in terms of taxation will hit middle-class voters in a real way. And the numbers just don't simply add up, and that comes from economists really from both sides, you know, of the aisle. And so I think that both candidates are really speaking to the hearts and minds of people just like our caller. But I wonder how much substance is really coming behind some of those messages. And I think it's one of the reasons why Bernie Sanders isn't doing quite so well against Hillary Clinton among some older voters, because she is selling a message that, sure, we like his plans, but I want to be the candidate who gets things done. On the other side, there's really been no counter to Donald Trump. There's been no real prosecution of the issues with him among American media. You know, he gets asked a question, he tools back to his message, and we never really get the answer, and there's no real follow-up. And if there is, you know, he tends to tool back to, you know, his core message again, and his core message seems to be because I said so.
Yeah.
So I hear the caller, and I hear that message again and again from any number of voters, that they really feel like the American dream has slipped away from them,
and that either Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump could be the candidate who delivers it for them.
Yeah, and I understand that if you're making $11.50 an hour that you're looking for something different. But Trump has all of this other baggage with him, this, well, let's blame the immigrants, you know, let's blame Muslims for not allow them in the country, and then we'll get rid of terrorism. Let's question the birth of the president of the United States. All of this nonsense, all of this hate that's involved with what he has to say, that you would hope somebody would say, wait a second, you know, my grandpa Mike came from Ireland, you know, my grandmother came from Mexico, that's who all of us are, in a sense, and to latch onto that hate, which I think is really dangerous, I don't understand that attraction. I mean, maybe I just don't want to see it, but it's fairly strong, I think.
It is fairly strong, and I think that precious few of us have said, hey, wait a minute. That he's been allowed to sort of forward some of these messages without, you know, a lot of litigation of those messages. And so I think that's really sort of the unfortunate part about all of this. I think people look at Donald Trump, you know, as a highly successful businessman.
Yes.
Who, you know, if he can achieve it, everybody can, kind of thing. But, you know, Donald Trump has been the beneficiary of a very rigged system that someone like Bernie Sanders says exists.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a bit of an irony there. In terms of how Donald Trump says that he's going to open this up to everybody, because he himself has been such a beneficiary of this previously rigged system.
Yeah. Thanks, Nicholas, for your call. Jim in Fontana, hi.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Jim.
I think what has happened here is that starting with, you know, LBJ, when he signed the Civil Rights Act, said we've given the South to the Republicans. That was a courageous move on the Democrats and his part. But the Republicans have played the low-hanging fruit of racism ever since. And now they've created Trumpenstein, you know. And now that the racism, we have an avowed racist publicly stating his racism, and we have seen the core of Republicans voting for that. So the imp is out of the bottle now. I think we can dispel with the ideas that people were against Obama, Mitch McConnell, day one, and all of that. For policy reasons, it's because of racism. So maybe we can really have a national debate now and a discussion of the, you know, America's original sin. And secondly, real quick, Bernie Sanders is creating a revolution among the people and young people. And doesn't matter whether he gets in the White House or not. I wish he would. But if Hillary gets in, she's going to be under tremendous pressure from this revitalized group of young progressives. So I'm very hopeful. I don't think I have enough faith in our country. I don't think an involved racist can become president.
Thank you, Jim, for the call. Goldie.
You know, I couldn't agree more. I think that there is much more value to the Bernie Sanders candidacy than simply winning the nomination or even the White House. I think that what he has been able to pull together is a movement among working class people, particularly on the left side of the aisle. And it has put such pressure on Hillary Clinton and on the Democratic Party to move further to the left on some issues. And so I think we're going to see a bit more of that. By the end of the day, you could even see her maybe embracing single payer, God help us. But that is what this candidacy means. It means real pressure on this potential nominee, real pressure on this potential new president to make some of the changes that we're looking for. I think where Bernie Sanders may also help benefit this campaign and outside of the presidential race is to, when that day comes, whenever it is, whether it's March, April, May, or even into June, that he decides to suspend his campaign, that he thinks he's gone as far as he can go, even if he takes it to the convention. I'm going to hope that he spends an awful lot of energy helping to elect new members of Congress, new members of the U.S. Senate, who can help forward some of the reforms that he's pressing for. Because, frankly, without that, with Republican control of both the House and the Senate into this next presidency, we're going to see the same kind of gridlock if we have, you know, say, Hillary Clinton win the Oval Office. And so I think that the caller is right about that, that Bernie Sanders has much more power, I think, in his hands, in his coalition, than we're going to see in a nominating process or even in a race for president in a general election. So I think there's much more power there, sure.
So, Goldie, if he's moving her to be more progressive on certain issues, what happens in the general election if it's Hillary versus Trump? Does she stay quite liberal on the issues, or does she have to move?
I think it's the way in which that she's articulating these things.
that on the one hand, while she's going to move a bit further left on some things, she's not the kind of candidate to nail her foot, you know, really to the floor. And so I think she's going to have an easier time than, say, if Bernie Sanders won this nomination of capturing it this fall because she does hold so many other centrist views. We're still pretty much a center-right nation. And getting elected as president in this country, you know, takes a bit of finesse, I think, in terms of where you are. I think there is a such thing, even though I think Bernie Sanders would disagree with me, I think there is a such thing as a moderate progressive, as someone who is a bit mixed on some of these issues, who may be strong on national defense, but certainly who pays an awful lot of attention to and puts a lot of energy behind income inequality. You know, I think there is a balance to be struck there, and heaven help us, maybe she'll find it. But in a race with someone like Donald Trump, who is so unpredictable,
right,
and what he supports and doesn't support. For instance, this weekend I heard him say that he supports Planned Parenthood. Quote: he wants not to see them defunded if they just don't do the abortion. Because
right.
They do a lot of good work.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not something that you would hear from a typical Republican candidate. And so I think she's going to have to stay alert when it comes to Donald Trump, because you just never know what kind of thing is going to come.
No, you sure don't. You sure don't. Let's go next to Doug in Prairie du Chien. Hi, Doug.
Hi. I just wanted to touch on Donald Trump's popularity. You think you got to kind of look at the bottom up instead of the top down. I just think the Democrats have historically in the last 10 or 15 years just kind of stole the people's voice on every issue in rural areas and smaller cities and things. They've falsely pushed comprehensive planning law, stole everybody's voices at their town halls and put the ISO in the hands of three or four people. And I think Trump just resonates with people because he wants to put America back the way it was, make it great again. You've got President Obama making statements like world law, and he doesn't follow up. What is he talking about, world law? To most people, that sounds like one world order. And he never elaborates on what he's talking about. I just think the Democrats have been grabbing rights here, left and right, and I think Americans are just tired of it.
Goldie.
You know, I think that there's something to that angst, that anger in small-town America, especially some of our more rural cities across this country. If you look at a map of the United States, you'll find that the deep blue portions are held in our biggest, most densely populated cities, and that the rest of the country is fairly red, and therein lies the balance. I think that Donald Trump has tapped into some of that resentment and angst in those small towns who really, you know, long for the day when the manufacturing jobs were plentiful, when agricultural jobs were plentiful and well-paying. They long for a day when they could work a 40-hour work week and retire after 20 years, that they could save and send their kids to college. I think that is part of the America that people really long for, again, in that this new America that we're living in that is more highly diverse, that is more service-driven in terms of its economy, where there are fewer manufacturing jobs and much more automation. I think that that is a fearful place for many people to be living in, especially when our educational system hasn't kept up with that, to be able to make certain that people are retrained for new jobs and that a new crop of a new generation of people are ready to take on that 21st century economy. And so I think that there is a great deal of angst there, and some of it is a bit of nativism that, you know, this is our country, and I'll be damned if I'll let those people, whoever
right.
those people are,
right.
whether they are Muslims or African Americans or Hispanics coming across the southern border, I'll be damned if I'll let those people turn it into something else. And so it is sometimes easy through the mouth of someone like Donald Trump to blame those other people rather than to take a look at how we have governed ourselves as a nation. Have we kept up really with our own economy? Those other elements, as I talked about, education and healthcare, have we really kept up with that? And in many ways, we really haven't. And so I get it when people say, I want my country back. I don't always default to the notion that it is a racial sentiment. I don't think that people, when they say, I want my country back, I don't think they mean they want segregation to come back. You know, I don't think that they mean that they want segregated schools or neighborhoods or that kind of thing. You know, I used to think that when I first heard it, but then I started listening more closely. And what they really long for is an economy in which a family can thrive again.
Sure.
And Donald Trump is tapping into that in a really meaningful way. You know, with some of his rhetoric, he's making a very strong connection, and that's why his support is so strong in the Republican base.
Thank you for your call, Doug. Let's go to Lori in Madison. Hi, Lori.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just want to point out the fact that a lot of the young voters that are backing Bernie Sanders right now will most likely go to Donald Trump if it's a Hillary Trump ticket or a Hillary Trump election, just because I think that the young people are looking for some place or something new. It's not necessarily who's following what or who's promising what. They just want something new. They don't want another Clinton in office. They want something new.
I just think they're not going to vote. I can't imagine a lot of them going for Trump, but maybe, what do you think, Goldie?
You know, I don't have, and someone asked this of me on social media just yesterday, I don't have a very good read on it, and no data, you know, points me in any given direction. But my hunch is that they stay home. My hunch is that their energy for the system gets tapped, that they are putting so much into emotionally and functionally into a candidate like Bernie Sanders. And if he doesn't win, if he doesn't sustain this campaign through March and April, then they really feel like, gosh, maybe there's nothing we can do about this system that we have. And so maybe you're going to find a bit of disillusionment. Sure, you're going to have some of them move over to the other side of the aisle and look at the outsider and take a real second look. I think that having Clinton as a last name is both a blessing and a curse for Mrs. Clinton, just as it was for Jeb Bush, that voters are looking for something new as in somebody from the outside. And so I think to some extent, you know, my hunch is the caller is right about the liabilities that Hillary Clinton may hold in this race by virtue of her last name, by virtue of how long she's been in public life. But I also think that there's something to the notion that younger voters could feel disillusioned with the system altogether if Bernie Sanders is not successful as a candidate.
Trump is not drawing a large youth vote.
He is not today. That is not to say that he won't as the general campaign moves along. As I said, he's probably the most unpredictable candidate I've known in my lifetime. And so that's not to say that he won't, but he is not today. But his, and it's also not a good read to say that he's only drawing working class voters. I've seen and heard from and watched in the polls, you know, some very affluent Americans following Donald Trump because they too are feeling some of those same kinds of pressures. And so it is difficult to read where all of his vote is coming from, but it is typically from smaller town America, from red state America, where the angst is most high.
Goldie Taylor is our guest, and it's All Things Political you're listening to, which always happens Mondays at 1 o'clock. Goldie is editor-at-large at The Daily Beast, and we're talking, of course, politics, what's been happening in Nevada and South Carolina and the road ahead, and welcoming your phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk@wpr.org, Facebook, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. Tom and Rhinelander, hello.
Yeah, I was just, I'm on the road. I'm channel searching, and holy cow, I can't believe what I'm hearing on this station. First of all, do you two people work for the Clinton administration?
Sure don't.
Nope. Well, you both are so obviously biased for this lady, and one of you keeps bashing Trump. Like Hillary's some kind of an honest, reputable person? Are you kidding me?
Are you a Trump supporter, Tom?
No, I'm a Cruz supporter.
Oh, okay.
But holy cow, what do you think of Hillary calling those guys who... The black Black Hawk down, not you know, the Black. Who's doing over? Who was over in Benghazi? Those guys that wrote 13 Days in Benghazi. Those guys.
Uh-huh.
She's calling them liars. What do you think about Hillary calling those parents of those, like Stephen's parents, liars? Got any response to that,
Goldie?
Now, I'll tell you what I haven't done is, and I haven't even decided for the first time in my adult life that I'm going to vote in these primaries. That will be the first time that I've ever set out, because I haven't, frankly, chosen a candidate, because I frankly think that the country deserves a better choice in terms of the Democratic and the Republican side, you know, really, of the aisle. And so I've heard the charge again and again about, I think they call them Hillary shills or something like that, of taking Mrs. Clinton's side of this thing. What I believe in is math. And what I have spent my time over these recent months studying are the maps and how people are voting and why they're voting that way. Mrs. Clinton has a huge level of, a huge distrust factor among the American populace. Yes, her last name does have a, it carries a blessing and a curse, but then so does her public record. And if you look back at, you know, the very strong relationship she's had with African-American communities, it carries a double-edged sword, where, you know, in 1994, 96, and 98, she was supporting a crime bill that led to the mass incarceration overwhelmingly of black and brown men in this country. And so I am highly critical of Mrs. Clinton and her public record, just as I am of Bernie Sanders, as I am of Mr. Trump. Mr. Cruz, by the way, I think has run a very strong campaign. Do I think he'll be the nominee? Probably not. But I think in terms of organization, in terms of, you know, how he's been able to fundraise and get his message out to his targeted voter, I think he's done an excellent job at that. But I think that is my job. I think my job is to take the candidates where they are. And I think all of us comes with an individual lens. But if you don't hear me make some, you know, attack about Hillary Clinton, whether it's Benghazi or crime bill or welfare reform or any list of other things, it isn't necessarily because I am siding with her, mm-hmm. because I don't think it's impacting her numbers. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm following. I'm following the math.
Yeah, we're not here to. Obviously, there are a lot of Democrats who aren't real enthusiastic about her. Bernie Sanders would not have been doing so well. But I think your point is very well taken. Nobody here is endorsing Hillary Clinton or anybody, really. I do think, though, that Donald Trump, in some ways, needs to be called out for some of the real hateful things he said about fellow Americans. I think it's dangerous for the country. And there are some who think Hillary Clinton would be dangerous for the country as well. But his comments, you know, undermining the credibility of the president, his comments about immigrants, this building the wall, this taking a fight with the Pope, it's just endless with women, with on and on it goes. And I do think that those comments need to be brought to the attention of people, Goldie. I think maybe you do too, that you just can't, which I can't imagine how a presidential conversation is going to take place. You would hope that it would be a little bit more elevated, and you would hope that we have nothing but good, honest, well-intentioned, caring, wonderful people running for office. But there are problems with all of the candidates in some way, probably, but he's got a lot of them. You know, she may have her fair share, too, and we'll see what happens. But he's running up a lot of hate in this country, and I think that's dangerous. So, at any rate, let's go to Karen in Winona, Minnesota. Hello,
Karen. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi,
love your show.
Thank you.
You're so fair-minded. Let me say the other side there. I came of age in the time of John Kennedy's presidency, and I didn't get to vote for him. It was the 21-year-old voting age then, but I certainly was inspired by him in so many ways. And I thought when he was assassinated that the world had ended, and I was so sad. And one of the thoughts foremost in my mind was, oh, yuck, now we have Lyndon Johnson, and he will just be a terrible president. Well, let me tell you, I bless that man. I was school librarian in southern Florida at the time that he became president, and I found that he actually accomplished all the things that made life better for so many of my students. I was in a school with a third Caucasian students, a third African American, and a third migrant children of workers in the field in Florida. This was in a long time ago, and the children would come in and out of school. They wouldn't be there for long, and President Johnson helped to pass the National Defense Education Act. We had money to help in that school. We had so much support for poor families at the time. We had Medicare that happened during that time. He worked on passing of the civil rights legislation for the Voting Act. He was not an inspiring person, but he got done inspiring things. I will never sit out a primary.
So are you supporting someone now?
And for me, Hillary Clinton is the choice. Is she perfect? No. But I think she can get things done, and she has shown that in her life, even when she was not a government official. So I'm not just supporting her. I'm knocking on doors already in my precinct in Minnesota to see if they'll come to the caucus and caucus for her. And if Bernie Sanders is a candidate, I'll vote for him. But I certainly favor her.
All right. Thanks, Karen, so much for your call. Lynn in Eau Claire. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen, and hello to your guest. I'm behind Bernie Sanders. I have nothing particularly against Hillary, but Bernie, to me, speaks my truth. I am part of the waning middle class. My husband's been a federal employee for almost 40 years. I have two sons who are policemen. My daughter's a special ed teacher, and all of those professions, those vocations, have been villainized by the Republicans. And Bernie speaks my truth.
Thank you, Lynn, for your call. Don't mean to cut you short, but your phone line is pretty scratchy. And we have time for maybe one more phone call or two. Patricia in Madison, hi.
Hi there. I just want to remind your listeners that it was under Bill Clinton's administration that he promoted and passed NAFTA, that has not been good for our country. And he also signed the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act that was put into effect in the 1930s that prevented the banks from putting their monies in risky investments. And that's what precipitated our Great Recession then in 2008, at least certainly contributed to it. In the Democratic debates, you have often heard Bernie Sanders. He would like to reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act, and Hillary is always saying she's against doing that.
Goldie.
No, I think she's right about that. I think that, you know, and there are some people who will say that Hillary Clinton was first lady, that she's not responsible for her husband's policies, and to some extent I agree with that. But on the other hand, I was, you know, old enough and cognizant enough at the time to understand that they were selling themselves and promoting themselves as a two-for-one bargain, that they were really partners, you know, really in the White House. But at the end of the day, one man had the pin. And so, you know, I do believe that we've got to look at, you know, the Clinton record, you know, separately but in context and understand where they were united and some places where they maybe were not. And today, I think, you know, if you look at Glass-Steagall, if you look at NAFTA, NAFTA has certainly not been good for us, and I think that there are a lot of people who would like to, you know, sort of reverse time and go back and redo that piece of legislation. I think Hillary Clinton has been honest, in one regard at least, that there were mistakes made, and that I think it is up to Bernie Sanders now, even if he won't be the nominee, to hold her feet to the fire on some of these issues, that if we are looking for some of these reforms to come to growth now, we can't afford to wait another 4 to 8 years. We may have to deal with the president that we get, and that president might be Hillary Clinton. And so I think that, you know, supporting Bernie Sanders right now for so many is pretty darn important. If you're going to have in him someone strong enough with your support to push her back to the left on many of these issues. And so I think that's just, you know, I think it's critical. I don't, you know, when people ask me today, are you saying we should all vote for Hillary Clinton? I'm saying no. I think you ought to vote your conscience.
And on that note, Goldie, we're out of time. Let's check in a couple months.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay. Thanks, Goldie. Goldie Taylor, editor-at-large at the Daily Beast. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this hour. Thanks to Kendra Smith for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. And thanks to KP Whaley. And thanks to Goldie and to you for all of the calls. Stay tuned.